The following is a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio. Want the real story behind the sound bites and headlines? Let's find the facts. Remember, it's not a conspiracy theory if it's the truth. You are not paranoid or confused. You just need to know.
And welcome in, everybody, to the Christmas edition of Everything You Need to Know. I'm Kip Kiefer, coming to you this morning from the MGM Grand Hotel in Las Vegas. And it is a beautiful morning on the Strip, all set for a big Christmas season here in Las Vegas. I'll tell you all about that as we go through the process today. But we're delighted to have you on board, as always. I hope all of your holiday preparations are going beautifully and that your holiday season is going to be joyous and successful for all of you and your family, friends, and everybody you surround yourself with in this, the most wonderful time of the year. Flew out last night. I'm happy to report that despite our dysfunctional society, the airline industry did a fabulous job of getting me to where I wanted to go, everything right on time, and can't wait to get together with all of my family and friends here, a lot of people coming in. I'm going to tell y'all about what our plans are. This is kind of the third phase of life, and I thought it would be fun to just review my perspectives on those different segments, remembering Christmas first from my childhood, then kind of transitioning into my experience as a dad with my two sons and those Christmas memories. And we're going to wrap it up talking about the events out here in Las Vegas this week, where my 2.5-year-old grandson, King, is going to experience his first Christmas where he has total awareness of what's going on and can talk about it and be excited about it. And it's just something that everybody hopefully gets a chance to experience in their lifetime. The three phases of Christmas. I guess you could say it's goes back to the Christmas Carol. We're going to talk about Christmas past, Christmas present, and Christmas way past back in my childhood, because that's getting to be a long, long time ago in this particular era. I do want to start off by not such a great note on Christmas, because the grinchiest thing I saw this week is something that I just feel compelled to talk about. And I'm sure that most of you listening have had an experience along these lines, but I just find this to be such a disgusting spectacle that we put up with in our society. And I never really hear anybody address it very much. You know, particularly in the Christmas season, I found it so distasteful last Friday, kind of being out and about in Birmingham and doing some Christmas shopping downtown with the great Monty Ballard, my good friend and advertising guru. Monty and I were just parking his car to go into an establishment. And when we got out, I saw him walking toward the other side of the parking lot. A couple of young ladies had just pulled up and parked their car. And Monty said, "Hey, I don't want to bother you, but let me give you some advice. You know, if you don't have a permit to park there, this is a real bad area for them coming and taking your car away. You might want to think about looking for a different spot." And I thought that was odd at the time, because, you know, it was not really the kind of area that you would think would be that heavily secured or that dangerous to park your car. It was just a big parking lot, and we were in some of the designated spots for the business we were going in, but these girls were kind of across from us on a different part of the lot. And as we started to head toward the establishment, Monty pointed over. He says, look right over there if you can see it, in that little narrow alleyway. You see what that is? He says, that's a tow truck sitting there. He says, they sit there all day and they wait for people to park their car. Then they hustle over there and look and see if they are allowed to be there, have some kind of permit or sticker or whatever, because there's an office building on the other side of this lot that, you know, really is restrictive about people parking, I guess, in their property, on their property, in their lot. Again, it's one big lot, and it's very interesting to look at from the standpoint of it doesn't look like it would be, you know, any different than the spaces designated for the businesses that are also attached to that area. But we walked another few steps to the front door of the business, who was one of Monty's clients, and there's signs on their door that say, be sure that you've parked in an authorized location. There are numerous towing in this area. And the whole thing just rubs me so raw, because I've had such negative experiences with towing and impound companies. And I guess my rant is that I just don't understand how they can operate lawfully. To me, it's absolutely, you know, inexcusable that, you know, your car can be taken away by the whim of a tow truck driver at the, behest of some kind of Grinchly property owner. And it's not even a legal process. It's not a law process. It's just private citizens deciding that your car can be taken and held for ransom with ridiculous rates for the tow and to bail it out if you can find it once you track it down. I've had such terrible experiences in this area, and it just grates me to the core to see this going on. We went ahead and picked out the couple of gifts that I wanted in the establishment we went to. We came back out, and he said, look at that, see? The tow truck was backing up a couple spaces. Those girls did move their car, but some other victim who were not allowed the wisdom of Monty Ballard to suggest they move their vehicle, that car was being hooked up as we walked out. And it just made me so sick to my stomach to think that somebody here in Christmas season is going to come out from whatever surrounding restaurant or business that they had stopped into thinking I'm just going to be a minute, and their car is just gone because these people, like hawks circling their prey, swoop in and take your car in the blink of an eye and take it to undisclosed locations. It's hard to run down. And once you get there, it costs you several hundred dollars if you get there that day to get it back. Don't make the mistake, if your car's ever towed, of getting an Uber back home or somebody giving you a ride and checking on it and finding it a couple of days later. Because all of these places have what's called storage fees, which I find very interesting. You would think that means that your car would be secured in a nice garage and protected from any kind of intrusion. No. Your car usually is in a rocky lot with a bunch of wrecked cars, beat up cars, and just sitting out in the elements. And they, for that great privilege, charge you anywhere from $75 to $125 a day. Apparently, there's no caps what they can charge for storing your vehicle that they've taken to their location to start with. So this is the most nefarious, unregulated business there is, and it's just plain scummy. Be careful. Don't become a victim. My worst horror story was back in 2016. My now deceased brother, Charles, was driving my car back from Florida from a Christmas holiday. He had taken my car for, I let him take it for an extended period. He was driving back through the panhandle in Florida up from St. Pete, coming back to Birmingham, and experienced some kind of seizure. He had some health problems, with all disclosure, that resulted from alcoholism that was starting to really bother him. And we still don't know exactly what happened, but he had a seizure and literally disappeared for about 3 days. We didn't know where he was. You couldn't get a hold of him. He was not the kind of person that would go off on a bender. He was the ultimate mama's boy, checking in with our mother in Florida constantly, even when he was living in Birmingham. For him not to be in communication, we knew something was terribly wrong. It turned out that was the case. I got a call. That all happened on a Friday. I got a call on Monday afternoon from the Jackson Hospital in Montgomery. He had been found on the street, unconscious, and rushed to the hospital. But there's no sign of the car, all his possessions, all of his money, his wallet. He ended up getting to the hospital without any of those possessions or my car. And that was in January. My car was missing the entire year. I had constant contact with the Montgomery Police Department, who would not issue a stolen car edict because the circumstances were unknown of the car's disappearance. Long and short of the story, in November, I get a letter from one of these impound places that my car has been in their possession since June, and they were going to, if I didn't show up with the title, they were going to file for a lost title and take possession of the vehicle. Of course, the other part of that was, since they'd had the car since June and it had been subject to a storage fee every day that it sat on their rickety lot with its windows bashed out in the elements, beat up, you know, completely ransacked by whoever took it originally. It was found in a wooded area. They were kindly charging me $70 a day storage fee. So to retrieve the car, I had to produce title, pay the towing and impound fee, and a $6,800 storage fee to get my car back. It was just like a kidnapping and a ransom demand. And I was just infuriated. Went down, saw the condition of the car, saw the fact that it was completely filled with water because it had been sitting out with the side windows bashed out. Whoever had taken it had completely turned it upside down looking for anything of any value. It was completely trashed. And, you know, by law, they were supposed to inform the police department that they had possession of a recovered vehicle. And the Montgomery police completely dropped the ball because supposedly they had an all points alert out looking for my vehicle. If this impound location notified the police, the Montgomery police claimed they never got the notification or never reconciled my information with the car that had been turned in. So the long and short of the story is, and this is only one of many really bad experiences I've had with this industry. So I had to point out the bad to start off on our Christmas journey today, because that's the grinchiest thing I've seen and absolutely unacceptable. And I hope all of you can avoid having that kind of fate in your holiday season. I really felt bad for the people whose car we saw being hauled away, who probably once again just parked thinking they'll be right back. And I'm sure their holiday season got off to a really bad start, tracking down their car and having to shell out a couple of $100 to get it back from these absolute, you know, permitted bandits and thieves and cretins who take advantage of people, and it really is a distasteful thing. On to Christmas memories and the good stuff here on Need to Know today. Again, Merry Christmas to all of you, and hopefully all of your holiday wishes will come true. I wanted to, again, kind of reminisce in three phases of my own experience. Christmas for me as a child will always be on a location on the Chesapeake Bay off of Bywater Road in Annapolis, Maryland. That's where my grandmother lived. She was a career woman before there was such a thing, getting a job with the federal government in the 1930s and working her way up to a senior budget analyst in the Department of Commerce in a 41-year career with Uncle Sam in Washington. She divorced my grandfather. My dad's was an only child, Bill Kiefer. She divorced his, and that's another trendsetter that she was. He had an alcoholic problem too. As you can see, that's kind of a theme in my family. I'm proud to say that me being a contrarian never developed much of a taste for alcohol because I saw so many people around me plagued by it and really haunted by the implications of it. So that's something that I steered clear of in my lifetime. But she divorced my grandfather and married another government employee named Wayne Chambers, who was a big, imposing guy and very successful. And they really built a beautiful life together in terms of this house they had out in Annapolis, which was a good 45 minutes from Washington back then, where they worked, of course, downtown in D.C. Of course, the stigma of hooking up with somebody that you worked with back in those days, they forced my grandmother's new husband to move to a different department in the government. But they were government employees their whole career until retirement. But this house was fabulous. It was right on the Chesapeake Bay. They had a beautiful boat, which I guess was they just called it the boat. It was called the Julie C after my grandmother, but it was a yacht, and it was fantastic. It was docked right down there on the other side of a long hill and a great flat backyard, which was a paradise for a kid. I would be out there playing football by myself and broadcasting the play-by-play. You could see my future was shaping up quickly. But at those memories at that idyllic location, the Christmases were always big celebrations. A lot of Wayne's family, my step-grandfather would come. Our whole family, of course, was there. The spread on Christmas morning when you walk down the stairs to their giant basement was just something that's just burned in my memory, and you could not have had a more perfect setting for just the excitement of Christmas for a child than I was privileged to have in my childhood. Moving on to that next phase, which was when I grew to become a father myself, had my two sons, Case and Clay. We were living, we had moved to Birmingham from Memphis and bought a house out in Clay, Alabama, just outside of Birmingham in Trustville. And my lovely ex-wife, who was such an amazing person, Kathy Blair, she and I shared a love for big events and wanting to make things as special and as amazing of an experience for our kids as we could. And as far as that criteria, I could not have married a more perfect person because everything Kathy was involved in turned into a special event. And I have such vivid memories of my kids. One of our first Christmases in Alabama, when we were still scurrying around early in the morning to get everything just perfect under the tree and everything set up. my boys, by order of their mother, were not allowed to progress above the beyond the top step of the upstairs of the house. They were sitting there expectantly in their Christmas pajamas, just chomping at the bit to run down the stairs and see the display area where the tree and all the presents and everything was laid out. And that's the image that's burned in my mind of the two of them. I think my oldest son, Case, was 9 at the time. Clint was 5. They were in their Christmas PJs, ready to go, with that anticipation that only a kid can properly convey, waiting, we'll say patiently, but with great eagerness to get on with the show. And when they came downstairs and saw the magnificent display of all the gifts and everything, all the decorations, it's just the Christmas that stands in my memory as far as being a dad. Those memories are something that are so special that you never forget. I do remember also all the years when they were small kids and them asking for the variety of different things they would receive. I remember the absolute most difficult construction process I've ever been engaged in was the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle castle that my son wanted at some point. Trying to put that thing together, it literally had 1,000 pieces. It was this big structure with all these secret compartments and trap doors, and I can't even remember all the things. But you know, me not being very mechanically inclined and not very good at following instructions, had a different kind of mind. I never was very good at building things or putting things together, but I have great memories of staying up all night trying to get all that ready for Christmas morning, and somehow every time managing to succeed. So those are some of the images that I have as I think back to my parenting career with my sons at Christmas time. And now it's a brand new phase because, as I mentioned in the open, this is going to be the first Christmas with my grandson, 2.5 years old, King Kiefer, born August 20th, 2020, a pandemic baby who is now walking. He's not walking, he's running and talking and so excited. He went and saw Santa and loved every minute of that. He is going to be so into all of the festivities this time with the whole family. He'll be the focal point. And, you know, really, if you think about it, looking through Christmas from the eyes of a child, what's better than that? I mean, as far as the enthusiasm and the excitement and just the experience for everybody, this is going to be a really special holiday season, and I can't wait to get it going. We're going to have a lot of great food and fellowship and fun. It's also the first grandchild for my son's wife, Tracy, and her family. So we're all on this same ride here to watch this Christmas with great glee and cheer and excitement as we watch King have his first big Christmas where he's totally into it. And hopefully this will be only the beginning of a bunch of memorable years to come as we prepare for the holiday season. So, you know, that's just some remembrance I have. I hope in this crazy time in our world, in our country, that a lot of people will take the time. I feel like one of the things that's sad about the transitional period we've been kind of experiencing with a lot of people wanting to, you know, change a lot of the traditions and the things that make living in America absolutely special. You know, if you want to go a different direction, you want to, you know, be more secular, get away from the spiritual and religious celebration of the birth of Jesus and the Christmas season and goodwill toward men and cheer for all. That's your prerogative, but don't rain on other people's parades. This is what defines so many people's lives. And I find it as bad as we talked about back to the Grinch trying to steal Christmas. People that are trying to assault and tear down our traditions, to me, those are people that really need to check themselves and, you know, conduct your life on your terms, but don't impede and intrude on others. This nonsense where you can't have traditional Christmas displays in towns like mangers because it's somehow a violation of your rights and it's offensive to you, or you can't allow your child to participate in singing of Christmas carols at school, or even attending a school Christmas party. I mean, all of these things are your prerogative, but don't lodge your objection, on the grounds of trying to stop these things for other people who this is part of their lifestyle and part of their traditions. And, you know, live and let live. It's sad to me that we are seeing so many of the things that are near and dear to all of us, family, faith, traditions, all our constitution, our whole founding principles. It's really a shame that we live in a time where a lot of that is under siege and a lot of it's criticized and scrutinized and intruded upon. Let's everybody try and show great fellowship toward their fellow man, regardless of your beliefs or what your particular agenda is. Let's set it all aside and love our fellow man and do something kind for someone. There's nothing better in this season than to give to the people that are not as privileged as you, and to give of your time and hopefully any contributions you can make to make people's lives in this season of giving more joyous. So that's pretty much it today. I just wanted to wax poetic about some Christmases past and talk about what I had witnessed this week. And I hope with all my heart that all of you have the very merriest Christmas and a fabulous new year coming up. We will be back next week and start talking about 2023 to come and all of the things that hopefully we will see unfold. Again, I wish you and your family the very merriest Christmas and look forward to seeing you again the next time we get together here on Need to Know. Merry Christmas, everybody.
This has been a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.